This is tape number 2, side number 1 of Love, Marriage, and Sex.
Strong family ties. Important principles often ignored can help you establish and maintain strong family ties. Seldom do families get together anymore. We live in such a hectic society. We have little time for dinner with the grandparents or for a family reunion. And because we haven't taken the time, the glue that holds families together doesn't hold firm. It's time to revive some old-fashioned values and build more permanent family ties. It might just save your family. Dinner at Grandma's. Let's take, for example, an old American custom to gather the whole family every Sunday afternoon for fried chicken, mashed potatoes and gravy, fresh-cooked garden peas, and best of all, three different kinds of homemade pie. If you ever had such wonderful dinners in your family, you can almost taste the delicious meals still. And who could ever forget the fun of games afterward with all the children in the neighborhood joining in? And remember those lazy Sunday afternoons in the summer when you sat in the shade of the old oak tree watching cloud formations float by? Or do you remember playing outside with your cousins while your parents sat and talked for hours? If that had been part of your life, you cannot forget it. But why is it gone today? Doesn't anyone care anymore? And why can't you start or reinstate such family get-together customs now? Well, you can. Of course, if the grandparents live hundreds or thousands of miles away, you can't have Sunday dinner together frequently. But if they are nearby, you can certainly make it a fairly regular practice. Even if they are a great distance away, all is not lost. Those wonderful family reunions. Another great old-fashioned tradition used to be getting the family together once a year or every other year. The whole family, brothers and sisters and all the cousins. There is nothing like it. We in the Western democracies live in very mobile societies. In the United States, a family now moves on the average of once every 5 years. Often, these moves are hundreds or sometimes thousands of miles. When such moves happen, the children may grow up without any real sense of stability. The result of this separating has created a whole generation who don't know who they are. When you grow up under the influence of your parents and your grandparents, there is little doubt of who you are. If you have a quick temper, as your grandfather did, you'll know it if you saw him yell at the cow when she kicked over the pail. If you have a fine voice for singing, you well may have inherited it from your grandmother. If you heard her singing lullabies, you will know for sure where you got your voice. Many have become more aware of their heritage as a result of the Alex Haley book and television series, Roots. It has made many want to search out their backgrounds and ancestry. Mr. Haley created a need to find out who we are and where we came from. This knowledge of one's family heritage seems to be missing in so many families today. Grandpa may have been forced into early retirement while he still had years of productivity left in him. Perhaps he died prematurely from the lack of purpose and inactivity. Like as not, Grandma was put into a rest home to rock away her final years of life in boredom. What a tragedy. And all the time, they could have helped so much. Don't let the opportunity for your children to know and love their grandparents go by. Plan a family reunion as soon as it is practical. If the grandparents are not living, make it a practice to visit the cemetery where they are buried. Tell the children stories about their grandparents and the good old days. You'll be surprised at the greater sense of identity it gives them. Non-traditions. Instead of positive traditions, do you know what many families in today's society have? Non-traditions. What are non-traditions? Let me give you an example. The typical Western breakfast in the U.S. Years ago, when societies were mainly agrarian, breakfast was quite an affair. The entire family sat around the table. Mom prepared a hearty meal of cooked cereal, toast from homemade bread, fresh fruit, scrambled eggs, and a hamburger patty. Dad outlined the day's chores. That was a tradition. A non-tradition is quite the opposite. Today, Dad probably grouches his way through the morning, preparing to fight the traffic jams. He may or may not bolt down a cup of coffee and a piece of toast. Where's Mom? She may have a job of her own and hurries through the blow dryer and hair curlers to be ready for a ride to work. And the children? Left to themselves, they take the easy way out and gobble down a bowl of pre-sweetened cold cereal. That's breakfast. That's what we mean by a non-tradition. Nothing of lasting value comes out of this lifestyle. There is nothing here to pass on to the next generation. No positive family relationships are built. The chances of the dinner hour having any greater family value are between slim and none. The major difference in the evening compared to breakfast time is the blaring of the television, that greatest of all conversation destroyers. Staring at production line situation comedies or old movies while eating a pop-in-the-oven prepared meal, the average family spends little time getting acquainted with each other, much less the grandparents and the cousins. That's hardly the kind of bonds that build strong family ties. Ethnic traditions. Some of the strongest bonds in many families are passed on from generation to generation as a result of cultural heritages from the land of their ancestry. Those customs often retain cultural tastes in food, dress, dance, and even in professions. One custom is particularly striking to anyone spending time in the biblical city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a city of apartments. On Friday afternoon, businesses start closing shortly after noon, as most Jews in the city make Sabbath preparations. A beautiful custom starts the Sabbath each week. About 20 minutes before sundown, candles are lighted in nearly every home. It's quite a sight. All over Jerusalem, through the windows, you see the flickering lights of candles on dining room tables. The family gathers around for dinner and often engage in another Jewish family tradition, singing Sabbath hymns. These traditions have been perpetuated through many centuries and serve not only to bind families together, but bind an entire people to an ancient heritage and to their God. Learning a trade. Another passing on of custom can be that of a trade or profession. Throughout most of history, children learned the trade of their fathers that had in turn been learned from their fathers. Because many modern societies have given up such practices altogether, crafts that have endured for centuries are being lost. Even if a youngster does not wish to follow in his father's footsteps, if a trade, craft, or profession has been learned, he will have something to fall back on. It's amazing today how few boys do or know how to do any household jobs, paint or mend things, change the oil, or tune up the car. Only a small number of girls know how to sew, quilt, or even cook, for that matter. You see, in order to learn many of these skills, you have to spend time with your father or mother or with grandparents. Since most of us are not living on a farm, we may not know how to plant, cultivate, harvest, can, or bottle, or freeze vegetables and fruits. Even if many families wanted to have a vegetable garden, they wouldn't know how to. Yet, many middle-aged parents have known how to plant a garden, and almost every grandparent had one, probably grew up on a farm or in the country. Why haven't we passed on these fun and useful skills? If you have not learned any skills that should have been perpetuated in your family, why not take a little time to backtrack and learn from your father or mother in order to pass them on to your son or daughter? It's up to you. Whether you have realized it or not, there are really only two courses of action to take. Either build meaningful and lasting traditions in your family, or drift into non-traditions that will cause your family to split further and further apart one from another. Why not sit down this evening and talk over what kind of relationships will best benefit your family? Get out the old picture album. Recall Granddad and Grandma, even your great-grandparents. Maybe you'll bring up some long-lost part of your family past that your children have never even heard before. Then, talk about what kind of new customs you would like to incorporate into your family. Obviously, not every family will find skiing the most practical way to spend their annual vacation. But some of the most meaningful family experiences can be worked around a vacation. Perhaps visiting national parks or taking up camping, fishing, or other outdoor activities will be something your family can enjoy. One of the best ways to spend vacation time is to hold regular family reunions, such as have been mentioned in this article. So whether you decide on special vacation trips, outdoor campouts, Friday night or Sunday afternoon dinners, or nothing more than a quiet afternoon in your own backyard, make up your mind to build strong family bonds. You'll always be glad you did. Someday your grandchildren will thank you for establishing family bonds that will be passed on to their children and to generations yet to come. Domestic violence, the secret sin. The problem of battered women and children must be understood, dealt with, and solved. There are some subjects so gruesome that humans don't want to hear about them. Yet in our world of increasing violence, these problems must be faced. The rising tide of domestic violence, which includes wife beating, child beating, and even beating of aging parents, has forced the public to become aware of what, in the past, has been a behind-closed-doors secret sin. Tragically, too, a climate of hysteria has been created in which people innocent of these crimes are being falsely accused by evil neighbors or by officials seeking publicity for themselves. No longer secret. This once hidden sin is still extremely difficult to discuss publicly, but discuss it we must. From Europe, Australia, South America, Africa, it matters not where, attention has been awakened to the problem of battered women and other tragic family abuses. One of the leading figures in the campaign against women's abuse is Englishwoman Erin Pizzey. After living outside England most of her life, she finally settled back in Britain in 1960. In 1971, she founded a group called Women's Aid and has since set up a number of shelters for battered women. One of her books, shockingly entitled Scream Quietly or the Neighbors Will Hear, recounts the horror stories of scores of British women and children who have sought shelter from both physical and mental abuse. Since the fledgling beginning of her first safe house or shelter, every one that has been opened was almost immediately filled. There is a constant search for property and funding to establish more. Such is the problem in Britain. And the United States has equally staggering statistics. During the period when nearly 39,000 American soldiers died in a futile, dirty conflict in Vietnam between 1967 and 1973, 17,570 women and children died on the home front from family violence. According to FBI statistics, a wife is beaten every 30 seconds in the United States. That's more than 1 million a year at the time this is being written. But before we draw the inaccurate conclusion that violence is limited to men against women, we need to realize that another facet of the secret sin that often goes unreported is, strange as it may sound, husband beating. Sociologist Suzanne Steinmetz of the University of Delaware has written a book on the subject of violence entitled The Cycle of Violence. She estimates from her studies that each year more than 250,000 American husbands are beaten and injured each year in domestic violence. And then there is the problem of neighbor falsely accusing neighbor out of jealousy or hate or spite. To solve a problem, public awareness of this problem is very recent. Few books were published on battered women before 1970. Some of the best-known books are the aforementioned Scream Quietly, published in 1974, Battered Women by Marion Roy in 1977, The Battered Woman by Lenore Walker in 1979, and The Family Secret by Stacy and Shoup in 1983. All of these books tell the sorrowful stories of broken-up marriages, women and children driven from their homes, broken bones and bruised bodies left in a wake of unparalleled family violence. They all point out how little has been done until recent years to alleviate the suffering. Now, communities, civic groups, law enforcement agencies, concerned neighbors, local, state, and national governments are striving to help. Funds are donated and taxes are allocated to help in a variety of ways. Hotline or emergency telephone groups are set up to help those in trouble. Counseling centers have been established. Safe houses or shelters have been set up where abused women and children can seek refuge. Yet the surface barely has been scratched in solving the problem. Only a small percentage of the abused know how to seek help or have the courage to make the first step by calling a minister, social worker, doctor, or the police. Unless checked, family abuse threatens the very fiber of society. It is only one of many scourges in a satanically influenced world that seems to be speeding ever more swiftly to its own self-inflicted destruction. But why? Why is there so much family abuse? Why do husbands beat their wives? Why do parents beat their children? To a man who has never had even a slight passing thought about hitting his wife, it is unfathomable to think of striking her. In the marriage ceremony, he promised to love her, provide for her, and protect her. How can any man abuse his wife in any way? In reviewing one of the above-mentioned books on family violence, one book critic observed, "The book is compelling, though almost too much to bear in some places. One stays with it to get answers to the questions that go unanswered. How can they do it? And why do they do it? The authors admit little is known about batterers, just armchair speculation and the unclear pictures of them from the victims." End of quote. That review demonstrates the frustration nearly everyone feels. Even experts in the field of sociology really don't yet have enough information to draw clear-cut conclusions. What research has brought to light, however, is dispelling the many myths that the public in general presupposes about battered women and those who do the battering. Some of those myths are pointed out by Lenore Walker in her book, The Battered Woman, pages 18 to 30. Myth 1. Battered women are only a small percentage of the population. The truth is, millions of women and children are abused all over the world. Myth 2. Battered women are from minority ethnic groups and from a lower socioeconomic status. The truth is, battered women come from homes in every social strata and ethnic group. Myth 3. Battered women deserve to be beaten and even get a masochistic pleasure from it, otherwise they would leave. Again, the truth is, a self-respecting woman would not want to be beaten. Pain doesn't feel good. And most women who are abused don't leave for several reasons. Not having financial support, fear of being hunted down and even more severely beaten, and the fear of what would happen to the children. There are many other myths Dr. Walker dispels. These listed are only some of the more common misconceptions. Can we know the real cause? Family violence has been going on for about as long as mankind has been on the earth. The first recorded family violence was Cain rising up to kill his brother Abel. The society that followed was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. Genesis 6:11, New International Version throughout. God observed how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. Verse 5. But why such violence then and now? The answer goes back to the first humans in the Garden of Eden. When the first humans were placed in the Garden of Eden, God instructed them. Included was a warning not to eat from one tree in the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know the story well. Deceived by Satan the devil, Eve took of the tree, Adam followed suit. What did the tree symbolize? Not merely knowledge of good and evil. They chose the way of deciding for themselves what was right and what was wrong. In other words, they chose the way of human experimentation, trial and error. They rejected revealed knowledge from God. That's what mankind has been doing ever since. God has permitted it, of course. But God has not left mankind without knowledge. His written word, the Bible, contains the revelation of His will, of how we ought to live. But most people have rejected this revelation of essential knowledge. Don't discount the devil. We realize many skeptics, doubters, and agnostics will ridicule the existence of a very real spirit being called Satan or the devil. Nevertheless, his influence is a powerful force behind family violence. When Jesus described the devil, he said, "He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies." John 8:44. The Bible further describes the devil as the god of this age who has blinded the minds of unbelievers. 2 Corinthians 4:4. And in the book of Revelation, the great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. Revelation 12:9. Satan has tried to pervert or destroy family life as much as any part of God's great creation. The reason should be apparent. Through marriage and the resultant human capacity to reproduce, human beings are given physical life. Each human has the potential to be born into the family of God, to serve in God's government for all eternity, and even to be part of the government that will ultimately judge Satan and the rebellious fallen spirits who followed him. 1 Corinthians 6:3. Small wonder Satan has attempted to destroy family life, to pervert child rearing, to demolish love between a husband and wife. Maybe this will explain, if you have not understood it before, why so much of human history has been filled with inexplicable violence and evil. It has simply been a world cut off from God for the most part, experimenting to discover for itself good and evil in a world under the influence of Satan. Modern family violence is no exception. Then what is the answer? While there are no easy answers to complex questions, there are answers. We can tell you from the pages of the Bible how a husband should treat his wife and his children. This problem spans all ethnic, national, and socioeconomic boundaries, so the solution must span all these as well. It boils down to whether or not an individual who is abusing his wife or children is willing to apply the way of life that leads to happiness. Safe houses, shelters for battered women, homes for abused children are only a small part of the answer. They are noble causes that help as many as they can. But unfortunately, such shelters cannot solve the cause of the problem. Such methods are the best human means so far devised to treat the result. In the end, only those who are committing the sin can stop it and perhaps put together again a family imbued with love for wife and children. Dr. James Dobson put it well. While he was not specifically dealing with the problem of family abuse in his book, Straight Talk to Men and Their Wives, he said, "If America or any other nation is going to survive the incredible stresses and dangers it now faces, it will be because husbands and fathers again place their families at the highest level on their system of priorities." Nothing could be more applicable to the subject of battered women and children. The first and most important step in treating the cause of family abuse is for men who have become husbands and fathers to realize the awesome importance of their responsibilities. Loving, providing for, and protecting a wife is infinitely more important than rising to fame and fortune in the business world. Spending time with, teaching, and loving children makes any other accomplishments in this life pale into insignificance. The Apostle Paul must have looked into our time today when he described the society of the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. 2 Timothy 3, 2-4. If that doesn't describe this last half of the 20th century A.D., then what does? That same apostle gave vivid, explicit, and loving instructions on building the proper marital relationships. Here's what he wrote in Ephesians 5:25-29. "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church." What a world it would be if just those verses were applied in marriage. If just one husband who has abused a wife reads this article and sets his will to change, it will well be worth the time and effort. There is simply no excuse at any time and for any reason for a man to hit, kick, bruise, and batter his wife, or any woman or child. Peter admonished husbands, "In the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives, and treat them with respect as the weaker, physically, partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers." 1 Peter 3:7. When God created mankind in his own image, he made Adam the man first. But Adam was not complete. He was only half there. God permitted him to experience for a few hours what it was like to be alone. In all the animal kingdom, there was not a suitable companion for Adam. So God caused a deep sleep to fall upon him and made the first woman, Eve, from his own bone and flesh. Together they could love, share, reproduce. Apart from each other, they were unable to accomplish any of these. Woman was not made a subspecies, a lesser creature, a property to be dragged about by a hank of hair. In all human history, there has not been a society, ancient or modern, that has fully understood the plain truth. Satan has deceived them all. With God's help, though, you can understand. Husbands and wives should never abuse one another, their children, or their parents. Their intentions and desires should be one of constant love, growing love, and the establishment and maintenance of a strong family headed by a loving husband and father who guides his responsive family. Then, and only then, will there be no secret sins of battered wives and children cowering for fear behind closed doors. And neighbors and officials will cease falsely accusing innocent parties. Too often, television, radio, and newspaper coverage is given of the accusation and little or no coverage of the fact that a family or parents were falsely accused. When God's ways are practiced, family dignity and love abound. It's the only way that will ever work. The changing years. Prepare now. It's time we all understand our natural life cycles. Those of you who are women face far more today than was expected of your mothers and grandmothers. Not only must you be an up-to-date homemaker, wife, and mother, you must also cope with the mounting pressures of financial responsibility and keep up with knowledge of a rapidly changing world. Yet, when you reach those middle years of life, the same physical, hormonal, mental, and emotional changes will go on just as women have experienced for thousands of years. For many, it's a devastating combination. Some have hoped, even thought, today's active, fulfilled women aren't supposed to experience irrational anxieties. It seems so out of style. Instead of looking at this stage of life as a time of reassessment, a time to grow and develop some of those interests put aside in earlier years, some look into their mirrors one day and see a vaguely familiar face and a figure they don't like very well. There is a noticeable tint of gray in the hair. There are wrinkles in the corners of the eyes. A few pounds of extra weight. A listless feeling. Frequent depressions. Occasional hot flashes and night sweats. And their nerves are frayed. It all adds up to the change of life. Menopause, as it is more technically called. There is in the life of every God-designed woman, that time when the body will no longer bear children. A physical and emotional change is underway. For too many, it becomes a crisis. Battling fluctuating hormones. Women entering the middle years, whether they admit it or not, have the battle of fluctuating hormones to fight. Many find it hardly a skirmish. But for some, it's an all-out war. It's up to you whether you will enter the battle prepared and armed, or whether you will face this challenge unprepared, both physically and mentally. It is an important time in life. The happiness of the remaining one-third of your life is at stake. How to pass through menopause and plan for the future is often one of the most overlooked and least considered times of life. Everyone has to realize the middle years are very real. Perhaps you have heard the story of the male who believed this sort of change was all mental and psychological. One night, he and his wife were guests for dinner. As they all sat by the fireplace after the meal, the subject of menopause came up. There followed quite a discussion on whether the change of life was hormonal and physical, or just in one's head. After some time, the guest's wife finally presented the best case to convince him he was wrong. She said to him, "Honey, please don't make it so I have to go through terrible turmoil during menopause just to prove you're wrong." The man had also thought morning sickness during the early stages of pregnancy was just in the head. Education, the first step. Knowledge is one of the most important ingredients to any phase of life, but perhaps more important at menopause than any other. Menopause has been described as adolescence in reverse. A young woman enters into puberty at about age 12 or 13. That is an exciting time of life. And it's important parents educate their children about this new phase. A girl matures into a young woman, and her body begins its preparations to make motherhood possible. During the next four decades, the fallopian tubes will release more than 400 ova. In those years, marriage will usually take place in the early 20s. Many families will have children. Conception can occur on a monthly basis. During a month when conception does not occur, the unfertilized egg does not become attached to the uterus and the menstrual period results. But usually in the mid to late 40s, this all begins to change. The childbearing year is over. God designed the body to cease the possibilities of conception, but not suddenly. This marvelous change usually takes a few years. Ancient and superstitious societies believed something was wrong. Some thought a woman's hair turns white during menopause. Many times women were suspected of losing their mental facilities. What a tragedy. Generations of women have lived with untruths and unneeded fears because of improper knowledge. Menopause is a natural and normal part of the life's processes. About 85% of women will pass through the change in life with relatively minor symptoms of discomfort. The remaining 15% may experience greater difficulty, but can seek proper medical help and guidance to proceed through the few years menopause may take. Menopause is not something to fear. It is a passing stage of life that may offer some discomfort and concern, but it will pass. Women can find the remaining years some of the most personally rewarding, gratifying, and joyful years of their lives. An understanding husband. For married women going through the menopause, an understanding husband can be one of the best helps of all. Many men simply are not educated concerning the importance of this time in a woman's life and do not offer proper support. Many men have not taken the time to understand their wives in this sometimes crucial phase of life. Perhaps more than at any other time in the marriage, a woman during menopause requires love, attention, appreciation, and understanding. Without a doubt, there is a hormonal change taking place. To a lesser or greater degree, there will be changing emotional reactions, depression, hot flashes, and lack of energy. Husbands must never let this time in life lead to casting a wandering eye toward another woman or lead to neglect. It is a time for husbands and wives to spend even more time together. It is a time for a husband to reassure his wife she is even more beautiful than ever. Remember, you are both growing older together. And if the wife has a few gray hairs, some wrinkles in the brow, and has gained a pound or two, so probably has the husband. So, in addition to education, the love and support of a husband, children, and friends are vital ingredients to help a woman through this changing time of life. What to expect? Most women can expect menopause to begin in the late 40s. The average age is 47. Research has shown heredity is a strong factor. A daughter can anticipate beginning menopause at about the same age her mother did. At the onset of menopause, the menstrual cycle may change slightly. Monthly periods will perhaps not be as regular as before. The number of days of menstrual flow may change over a period of years, decreasing in days till finally the process stops entirely. As menstruation slows down, the woman's body will usually produce fewer hormones. This, along with other adjustments, stresses, and strains of the middle years, may produce increased nervousness and feelings of depression, often for no apparent reason. There may also be weight gain without additional food intake, and at times an inability to sleep as well as usual. Sometimes there will be a tingling feeling in the hands and feet, and there may be occasional itching and a feeling of heat in certain portions of the body. Most people call these hot flashes. These conditions should be no cause for alarm. They are brought about by irregular contraction and expansion of many blood vessels in the body. These irregularities, too, will pass in time. Most women will experience a noticeable decrease in energy. The energy level may drop by as much as one-third at this time of life. Some women who have maintained a hectic schedule, whirred through the housework, and were always ready to go at a moment's notice, simply may not be able to maintain that pace. This does not mean the home should be filled with statements like, "Vacuum the house, Susie. Mommy's very tired. She's in that time of life, you know." Yes, mother may well appreciate a little extra help around the house, but she doesn't need those side-swiping comments. If there are still children at home, they should certainly do their fair share of keeping the house clean and other normal household duties. Fact is, they ought to have been doing that all along. And it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world if the husband picked up some of the duties of the home and together they would do the dishes once in a while. He could vacuum the upstairs or prepare an occasional meal. And if the family had not been able to afford it before, but can now, hire domestic help to clean the home once or twice a month. Most of all, you can be sure menopause is a passing phase of life. It will end, but it may last a few years. There may be some discomfort. A few women will have more severe than normal symptoms, but it will come to an end. The best years of one's life can be just around the corner. What to do? Once again, education or knowledge is most important. Read books and articles on the subject of menopause. Understand the variety of possible symptoms. Your family doctor can often be helpful in giving advice and, when necessary, recommendations on what to do. Then face that wonderful changing time of life positively. Dr. Marion Hilliard, in her book, A Woman Doctor Looks at Love and Life, describes her reaction to women patients who come to her office with the whispered statement, "Doctor, I think I'm in the change." Dr. Hilliard whoops with delight. "The change? Well, you're in for an interesting time. I can promise you that the best years of your life are ahead of you." I'm sure most of her patients are momentarily shocked beyond belief. Somehow, many think menopause is an illness to be treated by drugs and even hospitalization. While that might be recommended in the few cases of extreme difficulty, it is not what a majority of women need. Another important consideration in successfully enjoying the changing years is nutrition and diet. Not that this should not be an important consideration throughout one's life. Because of all the chemical and emotional changes being made, a woman must eat a balanced diet and maintain proper nutrition. Wisdom and balance in this area are essential. Most doctors know that chancy and excessive hormonal drugs are not the answer. Yet, many women automatically assume estrogen replacement is the thing to do. More often, it is not the thing to do. Why chance chemical side effects that could shorten your life to escape a few years of discomfort? There really is no aid, natural or chemical, to combat growing older. We all will go through the aging process, marking the various stages of life as they come. When we were younger, we could disregard, but shouldn't have, the laws of good health and not suffer immediate repercussions. But during these middle and later years of life, our bad habits take noticeable toll. As we grow older and often less active, our metabolic rates begin to change. We can gain weight on the same diet that formerly left us trimmer. Muscles begin to lose their tone and body alignment is affected. Many suffer resultant back pain. A common complaint of many women in the menopausal years is the loss of calcium and a condition of bone loss called osteoporosis. At this stage in life, regular exercise is vital. Coupled with proper calcium intake, the only known way to stimulate bone growth is exercise. Here's where husbands can again be of help. Begin an exercise plan by taking long walks together 3 or 4 times a week. Start with a half mile and work up to 4 or 5 miles. Almost everyone can exercise in this manner, and the talks you share while walking can strengthen your marriage as well. In addition to physical symptoms and the ability to take care of those physical aspects of menopause, it is most urgent we understand the emotional changes that will also occur. Fluctuating feelings of depression and irritability are not symptoms of encroaching mental illness. They simply, to one degree or another, are emotions one must cope with at this time of life. There will be good days, and there will be bad days. There will be times a woman will forget even her best friend's name. She will notice extreme fluctuations in her feelings of anger and love. While hormonal imbalance plays a significant role in the emotional makeup, outside factors can also play a part. A woman overly subjected to stress is much more likely to have fluctuating emotions than a woman who lives and works in an environment of love and understanding. This brings us to the conclusion of the matter. Every woman must accept that she will enter into and pass through menopause. It is not a sickness or disease, but a normal, to be anticipated, time of life. It is a time when a husband must offer more love, understanding, and time to his wife than ever before. Children, relatives, and friends must also pitch in to create a stable and loving environment. Then it is a time to look forward to about one-third of a lifespan of accomplishment and joy. If you have entered or are about to enter menopause, relax. You are going to go through some changes, yes. You will on some days be hard to live with. You will have some bad days, but they will get fewer and further between. One day, they will stop. Stay active and busy. Maintain a good exercise program. Eat a wholesome and balanced diet. Then you may find, as one woman wrote, the change begins at age 45. But believe me, life begins at 50. The art of grandparenting. Some of the most important people in the family are grandparents. Here is a personal reminiscence. How quickly the years roll by. It seems only yesterday you were young and carefree, living at home under the care of parents. Then came the college years, or you decided to work full-time. Next was marriage, then children. Before you realize it, they're grown, off to college, settled into jobs. They are married, and you are in-laws. Then one day you receive the momentous notice you're about to become grandparents. Such are life's cycles. Being grandparents, though, can be one of the most inspiring times of life. Unfortunately, in many segments of Western societies, the art of grandparenting has been lost. In today's highly mobile society, so many young families move away to pursue careers far away from home. At this time, grandparents can fulfill a very needed role of stability and provide a connection to hereditary roots. It is important to take advantage of their experience, love, and concern. The Bible teaches respect for age and its accompanying wisdom. God instructed through Moses, "Rise in the presence of the aged, show respect for the elderly, and revere your God." Leviticus 19:32, New International Version, throughout. What a shame when society rejects this important spiritual principle. Take, for example, riding a crowded subway of Tokyo, Japan. When an elderly man or woman boards, often a younger person offers the older his place rather than see the elderly remain standing. In most societies, that kind of respect is rare today. Young people crowd onto public transportation and seldom assist the elderly when a bus or train is crowded. With this declining respect for age comes an attendant lack of regard for experience and wisdom. It is a wise young person who takes advantage of his grandparents' knowledge. Don't forget the past. Our 12-year-old daughter spent last summer with her grandparents in Texas. They are all in their 70s now and have lived through and experienced the many changes of the 20th century. My job has required several moves, and we are now living some 1,500 miles from our parents. But we know the importance of grandparents and their influence. On my wife's side of the family, there are 20 grandchildren. As patriarch and matriarch of a clan, her parents have set a fine example and standard, not only for their 7 children, but for their grandchildren as well. My mother has a special love for our 5 children. Since I am an only child, they are the only grandchildren she has. Our children have been able to stay with one set of grandparents or the other at least one summer. So this last summer was our youngest daughter's turn to spend the summer with her grandparents. We found a book in the bookstore prepared especially for grandchildren to interview and record interests and experiences of their grandparents. She took her book and has written stories from her grandmother's younger years.
This completes tape number 2, side number 1 of Love, Marriage, and Sex. Please continue on side 2.